volcanoes, which don't blow out sideways. Almost the only person who believed that something really bad might happen was Jack Hyde, a geology professor at a community college in Tacoma. He pointed out that St. Helens didn't have an open vent, as Hawaiian volcanoes have, so any pressure building up inside was bound to be released dramatically and probably catastrophically. However, Hyde was not part of the official team, and his observations attracted little notice. We all know what happened next. At 8:32 a.m. on a Sunday morning, May the 18th, the north side of the volcano collapsed, sending an enormous avalanche of dirt and rock rushing down the mountain slope at 150 miles an hour. It was the biggest landslide in human history and carried enough material to bury the whole of Manhattan to a depth of 400 feet. A minute later, its flank severely weakened, St. Helens exploded with a force of 500 Hiroshima-sized atomic bombs, shooting out a murderous hot cloud at up to 650 miles an hour. Much too fast, clearly, for anyone nearby to outrace. Many people who were thought to be in safe areas, often far out of sight of the volcano, were overtaken. 57 people were killed. 23 of the bodies were never found. The toll would have been much higher, except that it was a Sunday. Had it been a weekday, many lumber workers would have been working within the death zone. As it was, people were killed 18 miles away. The luckiest person on that day was a graduate student named Harry Glicken. He had been manning an observation post 5.7 miles from the mountain, but he had a college placement interview on May the 18th in California, and so he had left the site the day before the eruption. His place was taken by David Johnston. Johnston was the first to report the volcano exploding. Moments later, he was dead. His body was never found. Glicken's luck, alas, was temporary. 11 years later, he was one of 43 scientists and journalists fatally caught up in a lethal outpouring of superheated ash, gases, and molten rock, what is known as a pyroclastic flow, at Mount Unzen in Japan, when yet another volcano was catastrophically misread. Volcanologists may or may not be the worst scientists in the world at making predictions, but they are without question the worst in the world at realizing how bad their predictions are. Less than 2 years after the Unzen catastrophe, another group of volcano watchers, led by Stanley Williams of the University of Arizona, descended into the rim of an active volcano called Galeras in Colombia. Despite the deaths of recent years, only two of the 16 members of Williams' party wore safety helmets or other protective gear. The volcano erupted, killing six of the scientists, along with three tourists who had followed them, and seriously injuring several others, including Williams himself. In an extraordinarily unself-critical book called Surviving Galeras, Williams said he could only shake my head in wonder when he learned afterward that his colleagues in the world of volcanology had suggested that he had overlooked or disregarded important seismic signals and behaved recklessly. How easy it is to snipe after the fact, to apply the knowledge we have now to the events of 1993, he wrote. He was guilty of nothing worse, he believed, than unlucky timing, when Galeras behaved capriciously, as natural forces are wont to do. I was fooled, and for that I will take responsibility. But I do not feel guilty about the deaths of my colleagues. There is no guilt. There was only an eruption. But to return to Washington. Mount St. Helens lost 1,300 feet of peak, and 230 square miles of forest were devastated. Enough trees to build 150,000 homes, or 300,000 in some reports, were blown away. The damage was placed at $2.7 billion. A giant column of smoke and ash rose to a height of 60,000 feet in less than 10 minutes. An airliner some 30 miles away reported being pelted with rocks. 90 minutes after the blast, ash began to rain down on Yakima, Washington, a community of 50,000 people about 80 miles away. As you would expect, the ash turned day to night and got into everything, clogging motors, generators, and electrical switching equipment, choking pedestrians, blocking filtration systems, and generally bringing things to a halt. The airport shut down, and highways in and out of the city were closed. All this was happening, you will note, just downwind of a volcano that had been rumbling menacingly for 2 months. yet Yakima had no volcano emergency procedures. The city's emergency broadcast system, which was supposed to swing into action during a crisis, did not go on the air because the Sunday morning staff did not know how to operate the equipment. For 3 days, Yakima was paralyzed and cut off from the world, its airport closed, its approach roads impassable. Altogether, the city received just 5/8 of an inch of ash after the eruption of Mount St. Helens. Now bear that in mind, please, as we consider what a Yellowstone blast would do. XV. Dangerous Beauty. In the 1960s, while studying the volcanic history of Yellowstone National Park, Bob Christensen of the United States Geological Survey became puzzled about something that, oddly, had not troubled anyone before. He couldn't find the park's volcano. It had been known for a long time that Yellowstone was volcanic in nature. That's what accounted for all its geysers and other steamy features. And the one thing about volcanoes is that they are generally pretty conspicuous. But Christensen couldn't find the Yellowstone volcano anywhere. In particular, what he couldn't find was a structure known as a caldera. Most of us, when we think of volcanoes, think of the classic cone shapes of a Fuji or Kilimanjaro, which are created when erupting magma accumulates in a symmetrical mound. These can form remarkably quickly. In 1943, at Paricutin in Mexico, a farmer was startled to see smoke rising from a patch of his land. In 1 week, he was the bemused owner of a cone 500 feet high. Within 2 years, it had topped out at almost 1,400 feet and was more than half a mile across. Altogether, there are some 10,000 of these intrusively visible volcanoes on Earth, all but a few hundred of them extinct. But there is a second, less celebrated type of volcano that doesn't involve mountain building. These are volcanoes so explosive that they burst open in a single mighty rupture, leaving behind a vast subsided pit, the caldera, from a Latin word for cauldron. Yellowstone obviously was of this second type, but Christensen couldn't find the caldera anywhere. By coincidence, just at this time, NASA decided to test some new high-altitude cameras by taking photographs of Yellowstone, copies of which some thoughtful official passed on to the park authorities, on the assumption that they might make a nice blow-up for one of the visitors' centers.